This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neal Conan. In recent presidential campaigns, Republicans, using issues like abortion, gay rights, and prayer in the schools, have claimed that they represent the values Americans care about. The party has succeeded so well with this argument that it might be said they've grabbed the values vote for themselves. But this year, presumptive Democratic candidate John Kerry and his running mate John Edwards are trying to redefine the terms of the debate over values. One recent example, in an interview with the Washington Post this weekend, Senator Kerry said values are at the heart of the Democratic campaign, and he vowed to wage the war over values on Democratic terms, not, he said, on what he called the Republicans' political, hot-button, cultural, wedge-driven, poll-driven values. What are the Democrats up to? Who do they appeal to with this approach? And perhaps most important to them, will it work? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. The values debate and the presidential campaign is coming up. But before we get to the Democrats, we want to spend a few minutes with the Republicans. President Bush today said the United States did the right thing when it invaded Iraq, even if there were no weapons of mass destruction in the country, taking the offensive just days after the Senate Intelligence Committee issued a report sharply critical of the intelligence used in the weeks and months leading up to the war. The president defended taking the country to war.
Although we have not found stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, we were right to go into Iraq. We removed a declared enemy of America who had the capability of producing weapons of mass murder and could have passed that capability to terrorists bent on acquiring them. In the world after September the 11th, that was a risk we could not afford to take.
And the president said it was a risk worth taking.
Today, because America and our coalition helped to end the violent regime of Saddam Hussein, and because we are helping to raise a peaceful democracy in its place, the American people are safer.
President Bush made his remarks at the Oak Ridge Lab in Tennessee, where he inspected a display of nuclear equipment that Libya had surrendered. Joining us now to discuss the president's speech is Michael Hirsch, senior editor at Newsweek. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
Happy to be here.
I know you've taken a look at this speech, and the president had a tough case to make here because while defending his decision to invade Iraq, he also conceded that there were no weapons of mass destruction found. How well did he build his case in this address?
Well, I think he laid out the best case that they have left, which is that essentially, you know, we're all better off without Saddam Hussein. Saddam in the past had, stated his hostile intentions. I think what he hopes and what the White House and the Bush campaign hope is that people forget some of the details, which is the timing, which is, you know, why now, which is the question of whether there was ever any imminent danger. I mean, at one point in his speech, he says very starkly, I had a choice to make, either take the word of a madman or defend America. Well, you know, those of us who've followed this issue closely know that the choice was never as simple as that. In fact, the UN was in there, and it turns out now that the UN inspectors were a lot closer to the truth in assessing WMD capability in Iraq than the CIA was.
The president made no specific mention of critiques of pre-war intelligence, but he did make it a point saying that many public officials, including Congress, saw that same intelligence and arrived at the same conclusion, that Iraq was a threat.
Well, that's right. That is, another basic case that the administration is making, is that everyone, including foreign governments, including governments that did not agree with the decision to invade Iraq, like Germany and France, saw this intelligence and concluded that Saddam likely had some weapons. There was a lot of truth in that. But again, the White House hopes that I think voters will miss some of the nuances, which include the fact that many of these other countries believe there was enough doubt about what Saddam had In fact, a lot of intelligence analysts believe that there was enough doubt about it that it didn't justify an invasion. So, I think that the key here for the Bush administration is to hope that this strong, stark message resonates and that people don't look at the details in the between the lines.
And this defense we heard today, is that what we're going to be hearing over and over again in this campaign?
I think so. This also goes to the question of Dick Cheney. You know, there's been some buzz about whether Cheney should be removed because he's identified with some of these very aggressive decisions in the war on terror and to go into Iraq. But again, the message here has to be very unified and very bold, and it's going to be an attempt to strike a contrast between the president as a bold and straight-talking war leader and the man they see, you know, they still continue to characterize as a flip-flopper and sort of over-nuanced in his presentation of every issue, who is John Kerry. And I think so you're going to continue to see the president not back down one inch from any major decision he's made.
Now, we're going to be discussing on this program for most of the next while the effort of the Kerry campaign to take the values issues back for the Democrats. One of the things that they're talking about as an important value is truth, which seems to be alluding to the argument that the administration made leading up to the war. How is the Bush administration responding to this values campaign? Is it going to be a problem for them?
I think it is a problem, and I think the strategy is becoming clear, which is to try to take back the values issue and also to do some serious shoring up work that they need to do with their own Republican base. And there's no better way of doing that than, again, hitting very hard these hot-button issues, abortion, gay marriage. You see the White House adopting this position in favor of a gay marriage, a marriage amendment that would presumably bar gay marriage, to the point where there appears to be even some differences between the vice president and his wife over what his position is. But the point here is to energize a base that I think they fear has become de-energized. And of course, the Democrats are going to come back and say, well, what about core values like honesty, like corporate responsibility, that they see the Republicans, and particularly the Bush administration, being very vulnerable on?
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Michael.
I was happy to do it. Thank you.
Michael Hirsch is senior editor for Newsweek. He joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. And as we mentioned earlier, over the weekend, Senators John Kerry and John Edwards stepped up their rhetoric on values. Joining us by phone from his office in Washington is Jim Vandehei, national political reporter for The Washington Post. He was one of the Post reporters who interviewed the presumptive Democratic candidates. Thanks for being with us on Talk of the Nation today.
It's great to be here.
Now, in the interview, tell us a little bit more about how the candidates framed the values issue for the Democrats in this campaign.
Basically, Senator Kerry is trying to frame this as the absolute heart of his campaign. Now, when he talks about values, it's a little bit different than what we've sort of come to know as values in the political context. I mean, Republicans want to make it about abortion. They want to make it about gay rights. They want to make it about sort of faith and morality in politics. And John Kerry's saying, well, wait a second, there's a whole other host of values that we consider bedrock Democratic values, like helping the poor, you know, getting health care to people that don't have it, to serving your country. And he's trying to make this the entire frame for which he wants people to view his campaign. And this is sort of a shift for him, because until a week ago, he was all about the economy, or he was all about national security and trying to show that Democrats can be as strong as Republicans in this area.
So has this emphasis on values then come with John Edwards joining the campaign as the vice presidential candidate?
I think it has a little bit to do with that. I mean, if you look at John Edwards, family man, his family is going to be with him a lot on the campaign. He's a regular church goer, sort of a centrist in sort of the mold of Bill Clinton. I mean, they feel like he really embodies the type of values that Democrats want to talk about, that they can now. They feel like, okay, we're doing better against Bush on the war. We're doing better against Bush on the economy. The one pillar of strength that the Bush administration still has is that Americans see it as sort of a value-oriented or a more moral or more trustworthy alternative. So they feel if they can make that a Democratic brand, being a value brand, that this sort of takes out that one last leg of power and might help them sort of take this thing to the end.
Is this a good strategy? I mean, who are they going after? Are they going after their base, or are they trying to get those swing voters that are out there?
I don't think it has anything to do with their base at all. I think it has everything to do with swing voters. I mean, John Kerry has spent the bulk of this, you know, unofficial part of the general election trying to change the Democratic image, make it more centrist, sort of like Bill Clinton did in the 1990s, try to run away from sort of his liberal record that he had in the Senate and sort of the portrayal that a lot of people have of New England Democrats as being more liberal and a little out of touch with where folks are, say, in the Midwest or in the South. He knows that the battleground states are very much in the Midwest. They're very much in the South. And inside of those states, it's in the rural communities. We sort of know how cities vote, and we know how suburbs are sort of moving, and it's sort of the swing vote are in these rural communities and places where values issues really are sort of front and center, especially for communities in the South that tend to be more religious than the rest of the nation. I mean, that type of rhetoric really resonates. I mean, this is stuff that the Democratic Leadership Council, which is sort of like the organization that represents the conservative part of the Democratic Party, has been talking about for well over a decade is the way to sort of to make inroads with a group of people that they have not done well with in recent elections.
And I read part of a quote from that interview where Senator Kerry characterized the Republicans' values as wedge-driven, poll-driven values. How much do they expand on that idea of how did they characterize the values of Bush and Cheney?
I mean, that's what's tricky for Kerry. I mean, he's trying to essentially redefine what those of us who've been covering politics for a while consider sort of the values issues, and that is abortion and gay rights and, you know, sort of the gun god and gays trifecta. And he's trying to move it beyond that. He's saying, I don't want to talk about those issues, and basically because his position doesn't comport with people who vote on those issues the way that they want they would want him to feel. So he's trying to totally redefine this debate, and I think that's what will be difficult, because at the end of the day, a lot of people who are values-based voters, people that are more religious than others in the nation, they just don't agree with John Kerry on a lot of those issues.
Let me read an email to you that's just come in from Dora. And she writes, the trash that was talked last week in New York at the Democrats' fundraiser and not disavowed by either Kerry or Edwards does not reflect the values of the majority of this country, regardless of party affiliation.
Right.
So when they say they're going to run a values-driven campaign, they'd better go back to last week and condemn that sort of rhetoric. They did address that in your interview, but they didn't condemn it, I don't think.
No, they didn't condemn it. I mean, they said basically Kerry's line was, you know, there were things said during that fundraiser that we don't agree with, but we understand their frustration, and we understand their anger. I was kind of surprised by that, because it was sort of one of those moments where maybe some of your listeners might remember Howard Dean was at a fundraiser, you know, 6 months ago when he was considered the favorite to win the Democratic nomination, and there were similar remarks made, and he got up on stage and he said, you know, that's wrong. We cannot talk like that anymore. Kerry had that opportunity and didn't do it, and it does sort of, it makes his move to the center, and it makes his focus on values a heck of a lot harder when you have Hollywood types and rock stars out here calling the president a thug and a killer, and you also have Michael Moore's film being so popular and sort of obviously revving up the Democratic base. I mean, it's definitely the trick for Kerry as he moves to the center is how does he do that when there's so much rhetoric that isn't necessarily where the rest of America is coming out of people like Michael Moore and Al Gore and Hollywood elites.
But there are also a lot of wedge issues out there like gay marriage. That's going to be a big issue here.
It is going to be a big issue. It's going to be a big issue this week as the Senate's voting that amendment. And if it comes to final vote, both Kerry and Edwards will be back in Washington for a rare appearance on the Senate floor to vote against that amendment. I mean, it is a big issue. It's in many ways, it's probably a bigger issue in this election than abortion is, which has always been the most prominent issue for social conservatives. But this year, it's the gay marriage.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Jim.
Great. It's good to be here.
Jim Vandehei is a national political reporter at The Washington Post. He joined us by phone from his office in Washington. We're talking about the politics of values, and we want to hear from you. Our number, 800-989-TALK. Send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about how a focus on values is affecting the election campaign. Join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK and our email address, totn@npr.org. Talking about values in a presidential campaign is nothing new. Here to talk about how values have been evoked in past presidential campaigns is John Kenneth White, a professor of politics at Catholic University and author of the book The Values Divide, American Politics and Culture in Transition. He joins us from WRNI Studios in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's take a look at some recent history. As I understand it, values became an important part of the discourse during the Reagan years. Why was that?
Well, back in 1980, Ronald Reagan's pollster, Richard Werthelin, devised what he called the strategy of values. And there was a sense in the polling done for the Reagan campaign that the country was off on the wrong track when it came to our values. People felt that friendships weren't what they used to be, that marriage wasn't what it used to be. And there was a sense that something more was wrong with America than just a bad economy or the hostages, the American hostages that were seized in Iran at the time. Ronald Reagan came up with a values mantra, and that mantra was family, work, neighborhood, peace, and freedom. And Reagan promised to restore all of those things to American political life and discourse. And that values mantra became not only an important part of the Reagan campaign, but an important part of Reagan's persona and of his presidency, so that the policies that he enunciated were really tied to those values. And that mantra worked very well. I mean, it was just repeated over and over again. But I should say it's not just the words. It's the words tied to policies that voters believe make those values more real. And so Reagan really was a first in American politics to pay attention to this issue.
But how did that mantra begin to change, though, over the years? Did it become more political, more divisive, the whole idea of values?
Sure. What happened during the Clinton years, Clinton understood Reagan's success. And back in 1992, when Clinton was running for president, his values mantra was opportunity, community, and responsibility. And in fact, from every Clinton speech, from the acceptance speech in 1992 to the farewell address in 2001, you hear those words in all of his major speeches over and over again. And Republicans began to accuse the Democrats, and particularly Clinton, of stealing their words, of what we would call dishing the Whigs, stealing the other fellow's clothes while he's in swimming. What's happened over the years, however, is that Republicans, and this is so typical, I think, of Bush's recent values enunciations during the campaign, believe that the country hasn't changed that much since 1980, and that's not true. We've become deeply divided over values. And that values division really reflects around, I'd say, two basic premises. On one side, you have people that believe there are absolute truths, true for all time. And so things like abortion being always wrong or gay marriage always being wrong or supporting the death penalty in certain cases, a sense that our values are really immutable and cannot change, versus the other side of the values debate. These folks like their values writ small, their morality writ small. My morality, they say, is for me, but not necessarily for you. And therefore, how they define marriage and family and their attitudes on questions like gay marriage, all of which are very different than the country was in 1980.
And very different from that mantra that you first described, family, work, neighborhood, peace, freedom. I mean, these are the kinds of values that most people would say, of course I agree with. You know, of course that's what I want.
But now
it's defined very differently, you're saying.
Right. Now the debate is, well, what kind of family? Ronald Reagan was really a man of the 1950s. When he uttered that mantra back in 1980, people still remembered the 1950s. He was evoking, if you will, a kind of common memory for the average American voter. That common memory is no longer. The 50s are relegated to Nickelodeon or TV Land on the cable channel. There isn't a common definition of what family is, and American demographics are changing so rapidly that we're having to rethink basic ideas of what is family, of what it means to be an American. These are really profound debates, and but I think this also gives lots of room for the Democrats to seize on this kind of values rhetoric and not cede it to the Republicans. Clear that Mr. Kerry wants to do that.
Have Republicans, do they own this issue at this point?
No, because again, with the electorate so divided about values, so divided, if you will, about morality writ large or belief in absolute truths versus those that like their morality writ small. I think there is a profound values debate going on in the country, and it's very clear that that values debate is kind of upending all of the old rules of politics. Think back to the late 1990s when Bill Clinton engaged in illicit behavior within the confines of the Oval Office. Most people prior to that would have thought that a president that engaged in that sort of behavior with an intern would be out on his ear. That didn't happen. Americans actually had to face a choice about whether they wanted to keep a president they thought was values challenged, but politically and economically effective, versus those that said, no, that president has to go. And as we know, the president stayed.
You know, it's interesting that the Democrats are taking on this values issue so strongly, saying that, you know, this is at the heart of the campaign, John Kerry is saying, given that it seems to be in a country that's very divided politically, it is equally divided over these issues of what our values are. And so I'm wondering who the Democrats think they're going to win by this. Certainly, it's not aimed at their base, as we just heard one of our political reporters say before. They're not preaching to the choir. So, who is it that they're really trying to pull into their camp with this? Who do they think they're going to get?
Well, certainly, they want to get independent voters. They want to. I think the Edwards selection was really aimed at rural America, particularly rural Midwest Americans. The debate about values. It takes place within this unique context. We all believe in freedom. We all believe in individual rights. We all believe in equality of opportunity. But the question is how those values in the new century get translated in new and interesting ways. And both sides of the values divide, if you will, use those same words, if you will, and come to very different kinds of conclusions. What Democrats are doing is very reminiscent of actually what Al Gore did in 2000. Gore presented himself at the Democratic convention as the values candidate. If you remember, his daughter nominated him for president, and Gore made that surprise appearance the night before his acceptance speech. The choice of Lieberman was the values candidate, all designed to set Gore apart from Bill Clinton. I think what we have here now is the Kerry Edwards ticket saying, well, we believe in family and we're not going to cede that rhetoric to the Republicans. We are patriotic and we're not going to cede that rhetoric to the Republicans. I think it's very smart, actually, for Kerry to take all of his policies put together and connect them to values. Because what Democrats have done and the mistake they've made in the past has been to say, well, look, we care about the economy and health care, and that's a social value. That may be true, but when you don't tie that to the larger values rhetoric, if people don't see that values connection, if they don't see that a candidate is somehow like us or shares our values, then you don't get a listen on those other issues. And I think John Kerry and John Edwards recognize that.
I want to see if we can get a call in here before we move to our next guest. We're going to talk with Glenn in Palo Alto, California. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. I'm just wondering what John Kerry and also George Bush mean by something where they say that, you know, John Edwards or Dick Cheney shares America's values. You know, you've heard this from both sides. I think the real problem with that is, regardless of how you define the values, I think America's values are really about pluralism. And this idea to create, like, some sort of coherent values that all Americans share, I think it's really anathema to what it is to be an American.
All right, thanks for your call, Glenn, and I'm going to ask Professor White to respond. Thanks.
Well, I think the answer to the question is really as follows. If you look at polling data over the last several years, what you find is that when voters are asked which party shares your values, the electorate's basically tied. Same thing between the Bush and Kerry, basically a virtual tie. If you ask voters which party would do the best job of promoting traditional family values, the Republicans come out ahead. If you ask which party best protects or promotes the value of hard work, the Republicans have come out ahead. If you ask which party does the better job of promoting the value of tolerance, the Democrats come out ahead. And I think this is sort of the real nub of, again, this divide, that if you take the 1950s style America, married, with children living at home, living in a suburb, if you will, the Cleavers of Leave It to Beaver fame, or earlier the Nelsons of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. This is George W. Bush's America. But that America is rapidly diminishing as a majority of the American electorate. It is no longer the real majority.
We happen to have a pollster with us. We happen to have Scott Teeter, who is an associate director of the Pew Research Center. So I'd like to bring him into the conversation at this point. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
You follow the fits and starts of politics from a polling point of view. Who do you think that the Democrats are trying to go after with all of this values talk?
Well, they're concerned with not ceding the issue, as Professor White put it very well. They recognize that the Republican Party has made a stand on the issue of traditional American values, but they don't want that to trump them among the swing voters who are going to be having trouble deciding on the other issues that are confronting the country in this election. We ask people, what are the most important problems facing the country, as do many polling organizations, and we find spontaneous expressions of concern about declining morals or values to rank near the bottom of concerns that people mention. People mention things that you would expect, the war in Iraq, terrorism, the condition of the economy. But I think the Democrats are making a calculation that for many swing voters who are having a hard time deciding between the Democrats and Republicans on the issue of Iraq or on the situation with the economy, that they will fall back on values as a basis for making a decision. And it appears to me that Kerry and Edwards have decided they don't want to give that up.
All right. We are talking about values in the presidential campaign. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Is there any indication yet about whether or not this strategy is working for the Democrats, or is it too early to say at this point?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. It's not something that we've really heard them talk about very aggressively. And it's come to the fore, I think, this weekend with some of the blowback from the fundraiser and, you know, the continued promotion of this theme by the Republicans. But I think in particular the Democrats are interested in doing as well as they can possibly do among a couple of constituencies that the Republicans have maybe starting in 1980 with Reagan been able to do well with, working class white Catholics, and in the context of the current election, Hispanics, both groups of voters who have somewhat conservative social values that the Republicans have felt like they can do well with or do better with, and the Democrats have decided they don't want to give those groups up.
All right, we're going to take a call, but first, let me remind you that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go now to Nathan in Chattanooga. Hi, Nathan.
Hello. Yes, thanks for having me on your show. Basically, I am kind of riding the fence right now, and I think my decision will be made in the last several months before the election. And I think a lot of people in my age group feel the same way. I'm around 25 years old. But the only thing, you know, there are some things that I do like about the Democratic Party. But the only thing that I think is swaying me is that, you know, whenever you hear a lot of talk shows, a lot of commentators talk, it's all about an angle. It's all about a moral angle that the Democratic Party is trying to take to gain the swing voter.
But, so you don't think it's real? You're not sure it's based in their...
Right. You really don't know if that's really their position or just an angle to get votes.
That's interesting.
And whereas, you know, the Republican Party, you feel that there is a definite position on things.
That's very interesting.
Like it's a more genuine position. Whereas I really don't know a lot of the stances on different issues from the Democratic Party. It seems there's a lot of generic statements being.
All right. Well, let me turn that question to Scott Teeter. Thanks so much for your call, Nathan. It sounds like, if listening to what Scott has to say, that there could be some pitfalls in this for the Democrats. If people think that they're just using it as a campaign strategy, it's not real. It's not as they're not as genuine as the Republicans are when they talk about values.
Well, I do think they're swimming upstream in a sense that people, despite the way Jimmy Carter ran his campaign and despite the way that Bill Clinton ran his campaign, it doesn't ring as true when it comes from a Democrat's mouth as it does from a Republican's mouth in the mind of many voters. And I think that the resolution of this is going to be how skillful the Democrats can be with this. They certainly do have good traditional values that their party has stood for that they could bring forth and make a campaign on. For example, tolerance. For example, compassion. George W. Bush did a good job of grabbing the compassion issue, or at least neutralizing it, in his label as a compassionate conservative. But last year, about this time, we conducted a poll and found that a very large majority of the public favored national health insurance for everyone, even if it meant rescinding the tax cuts. We followed up and asked people if they thought that that was mostly a political issue or if it was also a moral issue, and a majority said it was a moral issue. So the question is going to be, how well can the Democrats handle this rhetorically? If they come out and they say that everything in their platform is connected to values, then I don't think people are going to buy it.
And, of course, the Democrats' politics are values that the politics are based in that they can talk about.
That's certainly true. But if you listen to the kinds of things that Kerry was trying to connect the values argument to, it ranged across the entire spectrum of policies. And while it may be true that those things are connected to values, it doesn't make a very coherent argument or a very convincing argument to a skeptical voter.
All right. Well, when we come back from a short break, we're going to continue our discussion about values with Professor John Kenneth White and Scott Teeter. And we're also going to hear from NPR's Peter Kenyon, who is in Jerusalem. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Here are some of the stories NPR is following today. The Senate resumes debate on a proposed ban of gay marriage. If passed, it would be the first step toward a constitutional amendment defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman. And the United Nations Secretary General has selected a new envoy to Iraq, replacing Sergio de Mello, who was killed in a Baghdad bombing last year. Ashraf Jahangir Qazi has been serving as Pakistan's ambassador to the U.S. Those stories coming up this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow, the importance of political will in fighting AIDS. What is political will? Today, we're talking about values in politics. Our guests are Scott Teeter, the Associate Director of the Pew Research Center, and I have to apologize to Scott because I have been mispronouncing his name. It's Keeter, not Teeter. And also joining us, John Kenneth White, a professor of politics at Catholic University and author of The Values Divide, American Politics and Culture in Transition. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK if you'd like to join the discussion. And I have a very interesting email here that I'd like to read to both of you. Here it is from Al. Value Schmalus. This is a sure loser of attack for the Kerry Edwards campaign. There is one issue this year, if there ever was one, Iraq. People desperately want out of the debacle. Kerry Edwards need to convince Americans that they have a distinctly different, better, and more convincing strategy. Professor White, what I'm curious about in responding to this is whether or not the issue of Iraq can be part of the values debate.
Oh, absolutely, because it goes to, I think, a couple of very important values for the Democrats. One is that for years, Democrats have bemoaned the fact that they have ceded the patriotism issue to the Republicans, going back to the Reagan period, but particularly the 1988 election with Bush Sr. versus Michael Dukakis. In which Bush was able to cast Dukakis as somehow an unpatriotic kind of fellow. I think what has to happen here is that Mr. Kerry can cast the problems that we're now facing in Iraq in a larger picture that in some way also says, look, I'm a patriotic person. I'm going to stick up for America. I think that's the whole argument, by the way, of the Bush campaign in Iraq. Right or wrong, I'm the guy that's going to stick up for America. I think what Kerry has to do is enlarge that debate to say, well, patriotism includes ways of making the country safer, of working with allies, all of the rest. All of these actions, if you will, are equally, if not more patriotic than those of the Bush administration.
All right, let's take a call now from Craig in Aurora, Colorado. Craig?
Hi, this is Craig calling from Aurora, Colorado. My point was that your professor was mentioning under Ronald Reagan how values became more of a topic. And your pollster also mentioned how values at the same time is low on the list of Americans' concerns relative to issues. And I think the media is really the one guilty in all of this in not bringing issues to the forefront and instead passing along values in this era of instant news and photo ops. Everything has been reduced to a soundbite. And values, I think that is one reason why values fits in and issues don't. Issues take more time to discuss. And that's one reason why we're having all this values discussion. And that was it, really.
All right, Scott Keeter.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for your call.
Well, I think that the media are convenient target of criticism about the level of sophistication of their coverage of elections. But I'm not sure that I see the connection to devaluing issues relative to values. I mean, the public is quite suspicious of the media's values in any event. Not quite as suspicious as they are of Hollywood on the question, but I'm not sure that I can see why that would necessarily be the case.
I'd also add here that it's not just Kerry talking about values or Bush, but when you look at the survey data, you look at the individual lifestyle choices that Americans are making, and there is a huge values divide this year. If you attend church regularly, regardless of your denomination, you're much more likely to support George W. Bush. If you attend church less frequently, it doesn't mean, by the way, you're not religious, you just find your spirituality elsewhere. But these folks are much more likely to support the Democratic ticket. Same with if you're married versus if you're single. When we look at these lifestyle differences across the electorate, we're just a nation of gaps. And what the challenge is for both President Bush and Senator Kerry is to somehow bridge this divide. I think for George W. Bush, it's going back to compassion and conservatism and saying, wait a minute, I'm tolerant. And for Senator Kerry, it's to say to people that are married, that attend church, that believe that they're patriotic, that love the country, I share those same kinds of values. And I think what's happened in the country is that both sides sort of disrespect the other and believe that because they've made certain values choices that they're not respected by the other side.
All right, let's see if we can get one last call in here. Curtis in San Jose, California. Go ahead.
Yes, Lynn?
Yes, go ahead, Curtis.
Yes, this term values equates to what the gentleman just spoke of, lifestyles. If you go back to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, prior to that, the Democrats owned the South in terms of voters. After that, except with the election of Jimmy Carter, The South has been owned by Republicans, Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, and now George W. Bush. So this term lifestyle equates to something that they have used as a pseudonym to convince the South that they are really segregationist. So it's when I say that, when George Bush says that we share the same values, that's what he's meaning. And that's what is not being said, but they pick up on that. So the value thing is something that has been used, as he's illustrated before. It's a word that is played upon about the feelings and thoughts of others.
Interesting. John Kenneth White?
Well, no, in terms of John...
I was asking John Kenneth White if he might respond to the comments that you're making.
Professor White, yes.
Professor White? Professor White, are you still there? I seem to have lost Professor White. Scott Keeter?
Well, the Republican Party has certainly been criticized over the years for the so-called Southern strategy that was part of the realignment, if you will, in the South. And it is certainly the case that now the South, whites in the South, are predominantly Republican, and there's an increasing alignment, especially among evangelical conservatives. The role of race is perhaps important in that, although I wouldn't necessarily say that it was all racism. But that, for better or worse, is the alignment that the Republicans now depend on. That is, having conservative Christians, who many of whom live in the South, and that is part of what the Bush administration is trying to appeal to, but also is, at least in the states like North Carolina, that the Democrats feel they have some chance of getting a place where they want to make appeals.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Curtis.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on one other thing before we leave this topic behind, that the other caller made. He made such a distinction between issues and values, as if they are completely separate, that they're over here, there are the issues, like the important issues, I guess, like the war in Iraq, and over here are the values, which are these things that the media is making up and based on emotions. I mean, how separate are our values from the issues we're talking about, the policies we're talking about? Shouldn't they be informed by values? And isn't that what this discussion is supposed to be about?
Well, certainly policy positions are informed by values. But there are many different kinds of policies that can flow from a given set of values. And part of our politics really has revolved around the question of conflicting values that even individuals have within them. I mean, the most obvious one, I think, through our history has been the debate between the desire for equality and the desire for individualism. And in eras when individualism is called upon and evoked, you have much more conservative values in terms of limiting the role of government. And at times when equality is evoked, you have a more activist government trying to build a social safety net for people.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Scott.
My pleasure.
Scott Keeter is the Associate Director of the Pew Research Center. He joined us here in Studio 3A. We were also joined by John Kenneth White, Professor of Politics at Catholic University. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.